Are you gay?
Geeky?
Just enjoy hearing your good Judy's dish about the latest in pop culture?
Well, then you're in luck.
The boys of Flame On are here for you.
In every episode, we discuss the topics that entrance us.
Whether it's comics, TV,
movies,
drag queens,
or video games,
we've got you covered.
So, if you're ready for your gay and geeky slice of pop culture life,
then sit back and get ready to
Flame On!
Hey everybody, Pat DeBear here, and we are back with another episode of Flame On. I am joined by BJ.
Hi, I just ate some Taco Bell.
Same. I was in the middle of it. I did not get to finish before we hopped on for recording. And Eric.
Hello. I hope that in a week you guys aren't... realizing you shouldn't have had Taco Bell today.
You know me. I don't eat lettuce. We're fine.
They're never beating those allegations.
I mean, honestly. Well, it is another month of pop culture goodness here. Brian is not joining us today. He is traveling back from vacation. And we wanted to make sure that we got this episode out in a timely fashion, because we know that you all out there clamor for your Flame On Friday, and we didn't want to disappoint. So you got the three of us here. We're going to chit the chats about pop culture, things that we've enjoyed, things that we've seen, been exposed to, all sorts of good things. You know what we do here. We'll also give away exactly when we're recording this by some of the topics that, or at least one of the things that we talk about. Very, very topical for the day that we're recording this. So yeah, before we dive into our regular topics, we might as well talk about it. We've talked a little bit about it on some of our previous monthly episodes, but All-Stars 11 has finished very anticlimactically, in my opinion, I think I want to say. Eric, what are your thoughts on our newest entrant into the Drag Race Hall of Fame?
I like them. I'm happy that they're there. I think... I don't know how I want them to do finales anymore. I get that.
Yeah, and I mean, it's tough because a lip sync for the crown, or a lip sync Lollapalooza, lip sync extravaganza, whatever you want to call it, almost feels like it cheapens the rest of the season, because... Mm-hmm. Maybe not cheapens the season, but it puts the onus onto a different rubric, and it's not one that we really talk about, or like that. It's not what we go into the show expecting. We're expecting the best get to the end, lip sync it out, the best lip sync wins, and we know that that's not the case. We know that that's not how many seasons are judged, because that final lip sync could go in one direction or the other. And even if the eventual runner up wins, and it's all subjective, subjectively, the eventual runner up can win that final lip sync, but not win the season. And in those cases, it's usually, the person that won did a great job. They should win. They deserve this. But yeah, maybe a lip sync smackdown for the crown isn't the way to go. I also think
I think it in some aspects. I think it's just because the whole, I like the beginning, the first half of the tournament style for All-Stars. The brackets I enjoy because it guarantees these returning queens at least three episodes. But also they don't have to have as many outfits made for a season.
Sure.
But the second half, the semifinals, not even half a season. It's so short, which
it does, I understand, like, because
the way, sorry,
it does, it feels like whiplash.
Yeah.
You go from these, and not that three episodes is longer than the three episodes for the semifinal final, like those three episodes, but they feel like there's more room to breathe, where the semifinals into the finale feel like it just, it's blink and you miss it and it's done.
Yeah. And I mean, I understand because I guess seasons of television now are only 12, 13 episodes, but give them two more episodes and knock it down to four even.
Yeah, because, I mean, at least we didn't have eight people lip-syncing for the win at the end and have to do all of that. But, yeah, six still felt like too much. And then giving two queens byes in the first round was just kind of like, okay, like, I get it. But at the same time, why? But
because that way they didn't have two three-person lip-syncs, which... That's always...
Which I get, sure. Absolutely, I 100%. And those are never great to watch. But lordy, like, some of this is just like, they, I feel like they haven't thought it through. And they're like, okay, well, we're getting queens to actually say yes by doing the bracket turn, like the bracket style. And I don't know. I don't know. Maybe there is a way to do it. And the thing is that they keep on filming year after year, and it's something I saw it online recently, and it's something that I've said before. All-Stars doesn't need to happen every year.
No.
Like the whole point of an All-Star season is that you've gone a couple of years, you've gotten new competitors for whatever it is. You know, like they did this with Survivor. It took them, what, seven seasons before the eighth season was All-Stars. Top Chef, like season eight, I believe, was the first All-Stars season. And it makes it special. It feels like it's something because you get these people who did great on their season coming back and being able to compete and have a chance for the prize, you know, for the top prize. Whereas when you're doing it every year, it's great to get some of the queens like April Carrion, Mystique, Vivacious, like these are queens, or Nicole Paige Brooks last year. It's great getting them back on TV, but it just feels like it doesn't have the same luster that it did when, you know, when we went, how many years between All-Stars 1 and All-Stars 2? That was what, 3 years in between? So
yeah, and they waited after four seasons to even do an All-Stars in the first place. So there could be a couple seasons. And absolutely. Also, they're forcing it so quickly that if social media is to be believed, the reason that Ginger wasn't there in a step-down look is because she would have only had a week to prepare from after the reveal that she won All-Stars 10. To the filming of the finale of All-Stars 11 to get a look together.
Yeah. That's crazy. There was a little part of me that was like, wait a minute. Did they not do like the double, like the two recorded endings? Because the way that this finale episode ended, Crystal had the crown and the scepter and everything, and they were leaving the stage. And I don't think I remember another finale where they did like they did all of that, but I could be wrong.
They did two, at least it seemed like they did, because they did a live
reaction
the two finalists.
Yeah, no, that's when I was like, oh, okay, I guess they did film the two, because they had them come back and do it live. Although it wouldn't surprise me if they said, hey, we're going to have you come back and just pretend like you have a chance at winning, Joey. But overall, what did you think of the season overall? Did you think it was a positive, a neutral?
I think it was
booger down boots.
I think it was, for the most part, positive. I think I don't know. I for me, and this has nothing to do with, I understand these are people being edited to all get out, but I just don't necessarily enjoy Silky as a competitor.
Sure.
So for me, and then there was the whole added Akiria and Silky feud, which kind of just bled into everything else because of it, just kind of, I don't know. It put a damper on everybody's spirits, I think, in those last couple episodes of the season.
It felt to me like it was private matters that we shouldn't have been exposed to.
Yeah.
That we were getting exposed to, but not really getting any answers about. And it just felt weird. It wasn't your normal Drag Race drama. Like, this was, we have beef, but we're not talking about it. So,
like it wasn't fun beef. Awkward. Like, they didn't do it in a fun way, like Coco and Alyssa did on season 5, where they were actually
fun beef.
The what?
fun beef.
Yeah, that, fun beef.
That sounds like a stage name or a really bad gay movie.
Definitely the movie.
Like a 90s gay movie.
Yeah.
I'll answer that in a second, but to your point, there was no payoff. You know, right. We didn't get a Silky versus Akiria lip sync. We didn't, you know, there's no, not that there's a, payoff is maybe the wrong word, but a television payoff. They're going to have their issues. They're going to have their drama. They're been on YouTube videos or TikTok lives and had receipts and papers and all the different things, but there was no real, when you're gonna focus so heavily on that in the edit and then you have no resolution for the the viewer, it kind of sucks. Overall, I thought it was a fine season. The bracket's definitely better than the semifinals finale. I don't know. I don't know what, something is missing from All Stars for me, and I don't know what it is, but it feels like it's run its course for me. I'll still watch. Like, I'm not saying that I'm not going to watch, but there is a spark that used to be there that I don't get from the US All-Stars currently at the moment, as of this point in time. I don't need anybody coming into my DMs and saying, watch Canada's Drag Race All-Stars. The drama is so much better. I don't have time for that. Canada's never been one of my favorite franchises. I'll just catch up on the drama via Bussy Queens videos. But I don't know. I'll hopefully the next regular season will be entertaining again. I enjoyed season whatever this last one was, 18. And we'll see what happens with All Stars 12, because you know that shit's filming right now. So, or at least some part of it is probably filming as we speak, whether it's the semifinals and finale or something is filming.
I mean, if it's the same production schedule as last year, then this coming weekend will be the filming of the finale. And Crystal, hopefully, will have her step down look ready.
Goodness gracious. Well, listeners, let us know what you think of our newly inducted member of the Drag Race Hall of Fame. If you've enjoyed the bracket format, Tournament of All-Stars format, or if there should be some shakeups and changes, or if you think that it should, you know, go on hiatus for a year or two. They won't do that because money, but at the same time, from a quality perspective, I think it should. But going from that, let's talk about some stuff that's been going on in the world of pop culture. So BJ, I'm gonna have you kind of lead this piece here, because you know that we've got to talk about one big piece of news today.
Oh, okay. I was about to immediately be like, you mean video game companies being greedy fucks?
even though we already knew that. That is always why I still have a bookshelf full of physical media.
Well, yeah, it's we go through this cycle every so often because like the previous Nintendo CEO passed away, right? Like I think was it Morimoto?
I have no idea.
So, but it always goes through this because you have like a system that's really fun. Like the Wii was really good intro sort of system for people wanting to play casual games. It had a couple of really fun games on it. And then came the Wii U that was just kind of a blip. And it was like an obvious moneymaker. and it didn't do super well, but it was more like a prototype for the Switch because on the Wii U, you could either play on your tablet or you could play like on the TV. If anybody wanted the TV, you could swap and switch. The Switch is just a better model of that. But then the Switch 2 came out and there was the whole thing with your cartridges. We had talked about it before where the cartridge is just kind of the game key. Kind of like how they used to sell PC games back in the day where you got a physical disc, but the disc was just more along the lines of the licensing and it enabled you to download the game and stuff like that. And Steam has a much better, I think Steam and a couple of other stores online have a much better licensing agreement. Like you always own the game.
You can download the game and you don't have to use Steam at all to launch it or anything. It's on your computer.
Yeah, you can load it up onto, there's like a whole boot system that you can upload onto a drive and you can just go plug that drive into another PC or the Steam machine and you can just play it. However, we've got Xbox that's more or less pushing their Xbox Live system where they're talking about potentially releasing games first on there and then later disc, or it's a very slow burn. And then I know they announced something like when you put the disc in your system, you're now uploading it's just like it was with PC. So Xbox have seemed to gone back to like a PC disc sort of system, or they're moving towards that. And then you've got Sony that's just lost their ever-loving fucking mind, because how are you going to tell people you're going to do digital only when you literally just took a bunch of movies away from people, movies that people purchased? And I'm like, oh, y'all are just playing in our fucking faces. Like, and now they're all of a sudden shocked that people are dropping their PlayStation their PlayStation Plus accounts and their all the PlayStation Digital accounts. And I'm just like, are you fucking stupid? Like, I really wish I could just sit down with them and just be like, are you fucking stupid? Like, I get it. Like, it's this wonderful way to save money, Like, I get you want to save money because you need all that delicious green in your mouth or roll on it naked or whatever it is rich people do with actual money. But
even 2 months ago when they said, oh, you have to log in at least once a month to re-up your license on stuff or certain games might become unplayable.
Uh-huh. And it's...
And now you're going to digital only. It's just more...
It would be different if you had... Like, because here's the thing. The Xbox ROG Ally, the new handheld Acer gamepad thing, you can log into other stores. You can log into your Steam account. You can log into your Xbox Live account. You can pretty much log into, Epic Games? You can log into an Epic Games account. You have access to all your libraries. And I'm like, that's great. That's fine. You're playing well with other... stores. Beautiful. But the fact that PlayStation doesn't have even a modicum of goodwill, they don't even have a drop of it. It would be different if they did anything to give you any trust. But it's just wild to me that, like, they're just like, we're just going to go to this thing that's super untrustworthy because we've proven we can't be trustworthy with it. And so it's just weird to me that, like, all of a sudden, I mean, granted, probably the tariff, there's probably all of the political situations and the tariffs and all that shit. They want to be tariff proof. But here's my thing. Those games better not cost $70. I'm sorry. Digital. If you're not manufacturing anything, then those games can be, honestly, I would say those games better not be $50. You can do $49.99. They will. Oh, no, they absolutely will. It absolutely will. And so it's one of those things where now I'm having, like, because I've been a PlayStation girly since day one. I've played every PlayStation system. I think I started, I borrowed a friend's PS1 and he borrowed my N64. And then as soon as PlayStation 2 came out, I was PlayStation 2. I think Dreamcast was the last non-PlayStation system I owned other than my Switch, and I haven't upgraded to a Switch 2. I want one, but Nintendo pissing me off too. So I got to see what that new Pokemon game is going to be like, because honestly, what was that? ZX Legends was not it. So I was like, okay, good. I can stave off getting a Switch 2 for a while. But like, if PlayStation and most PlayStation games, there's only a handful that are PlayStation only now, because Spider-Man's available on other platforms. My favorite series, Persona, is more available on other platforms now. Kingdom Hearts is available on other platforms. So I'm just like, I think it might be the end of PlayStation for me. And it's just kind of sad because I'm like, it didn't have to be that way. Like, I mean, and it's so funny too because I'm not like this with music. But I think that's because I will pirate music in a fucking heartbeat. I will. So streaming music, I'm okay with because of the convenience. But I recently found my old CD book, and I'm inching closer and closer to a couple of artists that I may actually start buying. I might start getting physical media on CDs again. But I know how you feel about physical media for music, Pat. And I'm like, oh, this is what he feels like. This is what he's been talking about this whole damn time.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's pretty much across all media. Like, if I really enjoy it, if I really want to support whatever the project, person is, I buy physical media because, one, things can get changed, mm-hmm. and you don't have, you know, when you have a physical copy, you have that initial thing. Like, stupid as it sounds, and this would be a silly example, but Taylor Swift's original album, the fucking picture to burn with "That's Fine, I'll Tell Mine You're Gay," like, that doesn't exist in digital anymore. Lover, they took out the they got so much fucking shit for the "Hey kids, spelling is fun" in "me" that that's not on digital anymore. I was watching something where Beyonce, for the was it the deluxe edition of, is it B-Day? She recorded a song that had a, oh God, and I'm, please out there, if you're listening and I get this wrong, don't crucify me. I think it was like a Desiree song that she, put the phone down. It was like, I think it was Desiree. It might not be Desiree, but she recorded a song that, and like part of the thing was that she couldn't change the lyrics or whatever. And then she did and caused a whole, you know, a whole issue because they sued her to like get production stopped on, you know. So there is a version of the album that has this song, and that those physical copies are all that exists of that song. That song's not on streaming. It's not a thing, you know. I think she ended up using parts of the video for the new song that she put out. It's a Donk that just came out like a week or two ago. But those little things that get done or that get changed on digital copies, or another kind of silly example, I was having lunch with a friend yesterday and we were talking about Mariah Carey's Glitter and how the album itself actually is a good, you know, it's a good album. Came out on a horrible day, you know, and a lot of stuff was going on around that time with her and all of that. But the album itself, good album, right? He went to pull it up on Apple Music. It's not on streaming. I looked on YouTube Music. It's not there. So, like, you can't stream Glitter on a platform right now. So I have the album. I uploaded it to YouTube Music. I can go and listen to it whenever I want to because I had the physical media. I uploaded it, and it's there. Even if you go back to, like, iTunes days where you bought the files and those files were then downloaded to your computer, you had those copies of those files. Mm-hmm. You could upload
them. I still have mine.
Yeah, same. You have, you know, you could upload them to anything, or you could upload them to YouTube Music, unless it was early in the iTunes days where they were the encrypted, like password protected ones that were proprietary Apple. Because there's still songs that I bought on iTunes, like original iTunes days, that I can't upload to anything else because they're in that format that is locked by my Apple password that I don't remember from however many years ago, you know, long time ago, long, long time ago. So yeah, I'm very big about it on music. I have a lot of music. I still buy CDs. I still, you know, I've bought some more vinyl recently than I ever have, but I think it extends to everything. Like, I would prefer to have a physical copy that I can, if I wanted to, if I'm not online, if I am whatever, I can just play my video game.
So, actually, breaking news, apparently there is a class action lawsuit against PlayStation for creating a digital monopoly once they start only selling games digitally.
Good.
So, wow. That honest, listen, I gotta hand it to whatever like world AI demon that is cued into my algorithm. It's very timely these days. But seriously, fuck data centers.
For real.
That being said, we do, so it's a countdown. I think they said 2027, which I'm pretty sure is probably when they're going to release the PS6. Are there any games that you guys want to be released before then, so you can actually like get a physical copy of? Is there any games? Not even Wolverine. Gene's in
it. I'm not a big Wolverine fan.
I know. That's why I said Gene is in it.
He said it was Marvel's Jean Grey. I'd be like, oh, okay, let's talk. And I think it's 2028. I don't think it was that quick of a turnaround. I want to say 2028 was the original announced year.
Yeah.
But I could be mistaken on that. Eric, do you have any upcoming games that you want to make sure are on physical?
None that I can think of.
I don't play enough on PlayStation to have an opinion on that. I was annoyed because I bought my wrestling game. I decided to actually buy one like when it came out because, you know, got back into wrestling and enjoyed the previous version that I had bought a couple years ago. And no physical copy at all. 2K decided to go full digital on it. I was like, that's crazy. And it's on top of the fact that they went to the Ringside Pass grind XP to unlock your DLC content that you've paid for.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But no, aside from that, there isn't anything that I'm particularly clamoring for. Not clamming. I'm clamming.
Well, I've got a list. So Spider-Man 3. Literally Spider-Man 3 and whatever Spider-Man PlayStation related content. I know they're working on a new Ratchet and Clank game. And of course, it was announced Persona 6. Kingdom Hearts 4, which apparently this year is getting a full hour at D23. So I'm shocked that Disney remembers they own a video game IP or a video game that uses their IPs. I'm legitimately shocked, and I really wish they would break open those horrifying costumes they have in the back at Magic Kingdom. I used to work at Disney. That made me almost pee myself because there's nothing quite like seeing a 7-foot Donald with a wand hanging on like a rack in the dark, staring down at you. all right, cool. Yeah. So yeah, we're all on the same page. There's no hot takes here. We're all very much on the same page there. And then before we get to the juicier bit, I went on a deployment recently, which means I hit the audiobooks fucking hardcore. I'm once again knee deep in gay supernatural stuff. The last one I listened to was Bury Your Gays by Chuck Tingle. And this time I listened to Bored Gay Werewolf by Tony Santarella. And the follow-up book, Shy Trans Banshee. And I have to say, if Pat was a werewolf and a top, this book would probably be a little bit about him.
Dear listeners, you get to decide which of those things I am not. And then tell me so I can tell you if you're right or wrong.
We'll make a poll. But no, it's just about this like 20-something, middle of his college career. He gets a werewolf curse, and it's like, it's a werewolf curse. He didn't get bit. He got cursed. And his life just kind of unravels, and he moves to a little corner of a major city, works as a waiter, and gets blackout drunk before his transformations, and hilarity ensues from there. It's beautifully queer. It's Brian, who is our bored gay werewolf, and we've got Darby, who is a filthy them they. They are a art house avant-garde, like master of everything sort of character. I love Darby more than anything. And then you've got Nick, who is kind of their work boss and work bomb. But all three of them go out, they drink, they have a blast. And then Brian goes home and binge watches Love Island and other binge watches a bunch of other reality television. But it's just one of those stories that's like, it kind of gives the middle finger to toxic masculinity. It's just a really fun, witty book, easy read. And then the follow-up, Shy Trans Banshee, goes a little heavier on the fantasy sort of like modern day fantasy, which was actually really enthralling. It was actually a lot of fun. Shy Trans Banshee. But honestly, by the end of that one, I was like, please don't end yet. So for everybody listening, they're both available on Amazon or Audible. I listen to them through Spotify. But they're beautifully queer. Board Gay Werewolf gets a little raunchy at times. And then Shy Trans Banshee pulls it back a little bit and has a couple of tender romantic moments that enraged me. So, but yeah, it was, they're very good, easy reads. Do you guys read?
Don't make me read you right now.
I should have been filming those reactions. I've been popping little recordings. I should have filmed that. I should have filmed that in the worst possible way. That was great.
I'm Roxy Andrews, and I'm here to make it clear. I will read you down.
I do have a couple things I'm trying to read through. I'm halfway through Project Hail Mary. Oh. And then I bought the first Dungeon Crawler Carl.
Oh, I want to start
all
that.
All kinds of things about that. So,
yeah, I want to start that series because I do know Seth MacFarlane supposedly has picked that up for a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And after seeing the D&D episode of Ted, I'm like, yeah. But okay, well, on to the juiciest piece of news that dropped today, and it's the biggest telling thing of when we're recording this. The real trailer for Avengers Doomsday finally dropped. None of those weird AI trailers. Although I'm starting to believe the weird AI trailers were like screen tests that got leaked, because there is some similar footage with the actual actors that looks similar, but this clearly looks better because it's the actual actors and it's the actual scene. But what did you guys think?
I was happy they confirmed some people who are going to be in the movie and are still alive in the MCU, because apparently they haven't made mention of them in years, like Shang-Chi.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad he's still around. I'm glad they haven't really given much any of plot away, so I'm happy for that. But yeah, hopefully it's good.
What about you, Pat?
I'm excited for it. It actually made me excited to see the movie. The Hey Pal, I'm glad that they paid that off in the trailer, because I'd have been really annoyed if I had to. I would have ended up watching Screen Crush or New Rockstar's breakdown of 7 million Easter eggs you missed in this 2-minute trailer. And they would have had to have been the ones to tell me, well, if you watch it with closed captioning on, the voice says Captain America or, Steve Rogers. Doom stopping Stormbreaker with two fingers was pretty badass, in my opinion. Seeing Cyclops in comic accurate 90s attire. Gambit, I still don't know how I feel about Channing Tatum. But watching him square up against Shang-Chi, that was pretty cool. To your point, Eric, I think I started watching the Screen Crush, things you missed, or you might have missed. And I think that's where I heard, it's been 5 years since Shang-Chi came out. And I'm like, God damn, where the fuck is time gone?
And we were supposed to, I think the second movie of his was supposed to be more of a tie-in when they were doing the Kang stuff.
I'm sure.
And because it was supposed to be called Shang-Chi and the Wreckage of Time. And I'm interested to see if they're still going to do that. Because they did leave off on a cliffhanger because nobody knows where the fuck the rings came from. But I honestly, between this and Spider-Man Brand New Day, I it's kind of rekindled an excitement for me. Because I've honestly, none of the newer Spider-Man movies has missed, in my opinion. I love, and this is going to sound terrible, I kind of love it when Peter Parker's life is a fucking mess. because it makes for some of the best Peter Parker, not Spider-Man storytelling, but Peter Parker's storytelling. It's just one of those things where you have this kid that has the worst shit happen to him, but he's still determined to actually do a good thing. And I'm like, would not be me, bitch. But this, what's funny is after watching Ironheart, which apparently the Ironheart's like, I think the only piece of television lore from the show. And I think Loki, those are the only two like TV shows that have any kind of real link to this. Because I guess Ironheart mixing mystical with her armor, that's kind of like a power scaling of what Doom is supposed to be like, which he is in the comics. He does the mystical and he does the physical science behind his power and his abilities. So I like kind of having this idea that no, because when you really pay attention to a lot of the heroes in Marvel, there's no mix of the two really. It's one or the other. Or you're a science accident. Like, that's kind of really it. So it's just, I magic tech is one of my fantasy sci-fi mixture things that I fucking love that shit. I love it when you have magic technology or technology that affects magic. I love that shit. But I'm going to laugh like a fucking Disney villain. I will go out to my balcony at the next thunderstorm and cackle like a fucking maniac if we get two movies filled with Doctor Doom and we never see his fucking face, or his face is actually disfigured. Because when they announced that Robert Downey Jr. Was playing Doctor Doom, I know some people were thinking that like, oh, we're just going to get like, we're going to get like evil Tony Stark, but we're not getting that. And after this trailer, I know we're not getting that. And I'm excited that we're not getting that. And I feel like fans are going to be weirded out by it. But I feel like them keeping the mask on, not taking his mask off, I feel like that's great. I think
they're going to do evil Tony Stark.
I mean, if he's wearing the Extremis armor, then absolutely. Like if he's actually evil Tony Stark, I'm down. But
he we'll put down see. The bottle and picked up the Darkhold,
right? But we'll see. All this did was show us people coming together. I'm getting Fish Daddy back, and I'm very excited to get Fish Daddy back. I'm over the moon. I'm gonna have very mixed feelings if he falls for that white woman again. I'm sorry. I'm gonna. That's going to tickle me in the wrong spot.
That's what happens in the comics.
and I know they're gonna say it. I know those sweaty corn chip stain having bitches are all gonna be like, yeah, the blonde white woman. That's how it should be. And I'm like, I'm just. But I love Sue. I love Sue, and I'm very interested to see how all these specific characters have their dynamic. I do love the fact that we're not going to get, like, it seemed like Peter was MIA, and it seemed like Strange was MIA. So a lot of the originals are MIA, except for like Steve and Thor. And Ant-Man, like a lot of people are MIA, and I'm okay with that.
Well, they probably didn't want to put Peter or Bruce in this first trailer until after whatever happens in Brand New Day happens.
Yeah. So I'm interested in seeing how that kind of, if they have like a little post credit, like surprise, it's happening now sort of scene. But also one of the things I'm a little bit worried about, nervous about is fucking, where's baby girl? I'm a little bit worried about baby girl, Thor's daughter.
Well, one of the big threads that went through the four like mini trailers are the children.
Mm-hmm.
So you have Franklin with the well, and this post credit scene, but you've got Franklin with the Fantastic Four and Doom. You've got Thor talking about, what is her name? I can't remember her name.
I can't either. It was Gore's daughter.
Hope.
Yeah.
She was Love, wasn't she?
Love and Thunder.
Love and Thunder. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. I was like, wait, no, Hope wouldn't work because that's Hope Summers.
That's Wasp.
Oh, that too.
Yeah.
But like there's...
Is Doom going to make the Young Avengers?
I don't know. But Steve's like little teaser had him holding a baby.
Like, oh, yeah.
The children is the running line through all of like the teaser trailers and all of that. So
and Shuri's nephew. So I'm wondering. Oh, so Doom's going after all the children, probably children for some sort of thing to remake the universe, probably. Which is, yeah, that's a very Doom. That's a very Doom model of things, taking special children and using them to rebuild a universe. So yeah, that's very on brand. And if that's the case, then oh yeah, I'm here for it. But yeah, so I'm excited. I'm not gonna lie, I'm excited. I'm over the moon. I can't wait for Brand New Day. I know that comes out soon,
the 31st.
Yeah.
Okay.
A week after this episode drops.
Yep. So I'm definitely gonna be at Brand New Day like opening weekend. I get back from my next work trip that weekend, so I'll probably hit that like the day I come back, just to avoid spoilers, because I know they're going to explode everywhere.
Sure.
But yeah, so I'm excited. I can't wait. We'll watch it. We'll probably do a micro episode of it. But yeah, I'm excited to get my super hot fish daddy and more M'Baku. All about M'Baku. So and then we get Steve with the beard. All here. I'm always here for Steve with the beard. So
for sure,
I can give him another child.
Totally agree. Well, appreciate you spearheading all of that news and topics for us to chat about, Eric. I think you went to the movies recently.
Yes, I went to go see The Odyssey.
Was it as good as the musical?
If it was as good as Epic, they are different pieces of media. Yes, I would be lying though if there weren't certain times when I'm like thinking of the lyrics from Epic as scenes were playing out on the screen, or anticipating for whenever this hits streaming, so people can start making fan cuts of. The live action with the Epic songs in the background. So if anyone is living under a rock, The Odyssey is a 2026 epic action fantasy film written and directed by Christopher Nolan, produced by Nolan and his wife Emma Thomas. It's an adaptation of Homer's ancient Greek poem, The Odyssey. Its ensemble cast includes Matt Damon, Tom Holland, Anne Hathaway, Robert Pattinson, Lupita Nyong'o, Samantha Morton, Zendaya, and Charlize Theron. So this was kind of the pre-Spider-Man, because it's got Tom Holland and Zendaya in it. but if you know the story of the Odyssey, this movie is The Odyssey. I don't know how to kind of there's no kind of spoiler alerts or anything.
I was going to say, please don't spoil this. I don't.
spoil the shit out of it.
I mean, it's an achievement in filmmaking. Everything about the acting is fantastic. The directing is great. Sets, costumes, it's all amazing. I will say, kind of apart from the Trojan horse, which is kind of could be considered the beginning of the Odyssey, but it's more part of the Iliad. The most famous part of the Odyssey is probably the Cyclops, Polyphemus. And I'll say that might be the weakest part of this movie.
Interesting.
Because the way he chose to adapt it and adapt Polyphemus, not the creature itself, that was fine. And but there was no kind of witty dialogue between Polyphemus and Odysseus. They never really talk. He just comes in, eats a couple guys, falls asleep.
Can you see his wiener?
No.
Boo!
Can't see that one-eyed monster.
Like DJ at Atlanta Bear Fest.
Boo, it's a miss. It's a miss. I'm not seeing it. All my Greek monsters should be giant and have their wieners swinging. That is bare minimum requirement for a good Greek epic.
You're not wrong. But Polyphemus doesn't say anything until after they stab his eye. And only then does he start praying to Poseidon. And there's no kind of that infamous where Odysseus tells him his name is nobody. And that witty repartee. And so, yeah, that was a little disappointing. The only god that actually shows up manifested is Athena, who's played by Zendaya. Poseidon and Zeus are just alluded to in the storms and the light and the thunder and the waves of the sea. And Christopher Nolan said that it's because that's how the ancient Greeks of that time would have seen the gods. They wouldn't have seen so much physical manifestation or human manifestations of the gods. I thought Matt Damon and Anne Hathaway were freaking amazing. They'll definitely be up for Oscars. If I'm sad about anything, it'll probably be Matt Damon will probably win, which means Ryan Gosling will probably lose for Project Hail Mary. They're probably both going to win the Golden Globes, though, because Project Hail Mary is going to be up for musical/comedy. Let's see here.
Do you see any wieners in the movie?
No, no wieners. Even though it's rated R, it's just for violence.
An R rating? And do you get a titty?
I don't even remember titties.
Oh my gosh. Do you get a man titty?
Yeah, you get some man titties.
Oh, okay. Jeez. All right. I was like, is there anything in this movie for me? Anything at all? Like, I love Zendaya, but she can't carry an entire movie. Like, I need something to keep me awake. And it'll but a man titty spread throughout the entire movie, that'll keep me going.
There were some not really, but online controversies with certain casting in the movie. People were up in arms about Lupita Nyong'o being cast as Helen. And just in general, the diversity of casting.
Too diverse, not diverse enough?
Too diverse.
Of course.
Because those are the people.
The ones, of course, like, those corn chip smelling, underwear staining bitches. Or my personal favorite, the academics. Well, they wouldn't really be black people though. We couldn't have black people. That's inaccurate.
It's not the people who study the classics who are having any issues with the way no one made this film. It's just the horrible people online who are
the basement dwellers. Got it.
And they were also upset about Elliot Page being cast because they thought that he was cast as Achilles. And so that was the whole issue. Well, he's not man enough to be Achilles when he doesn't play Achilles at all. The only valid criticism I've seen for him being cast is the character he plays is supposed to be late teens to maybe early 20s. And he's a 40-year-old man. And
oh, yeah. No, Elliot, you older, buddy. Yeah, okay. I gotta give him that one, Elliot. You full grown ass adult. Yeah. Like you cut. Elliot is cut to the gods, but no. Mm-mm. Me and Elliot are kicking the same age, so yeah. Sorry.
But it's a great film. I will say I appreciated more the. I didn't get as emotional as I thought I was going to get. Even though the acting's amazing and everything, I just kind of appreciated it as a piece of movie making, and it's amazing at what it does, but I didn't feel it, you know?
See, that's because there wasn't any monster dong and any wieners. You would have felt it more had you've seen everything. Everything laid bare on the screen.
Quite possibly. Mm-hmm. And probably just because it wasn't a musical. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But it's definitely worth seeing if you can sit in a seat for 3 hours, because it is a 3-hour movie. Yeah.
It's a lot. But I've heard great things about it, so I don't know if I will get a chance to see it in the theaters, but
that is Circe, I'm sorry I didn't speak on this, but Circe, that whole scene with her turning the men to pigs is horrifying. It's body horror. It's because, yes, she puts them under a spell, but she physically molds them into the pigs.
Oh,
she presses on their faces and turns them into snouts. It's
now you're speaking my language. Body horror, baby. A little Cronenberg nightmare goodness. Now you got my attention. There we go. I will be picking up a ticket on $5 Tuesdays.
Yeah, I am disappointed that I didn't get to see it in the 70mm IMAX, because the nearest theater that does that is down in Miami, and I'm not going to drive that.
Makes sense. Movie. What would you give it flame rating-wise?
I would go a full 5 flames. It's an amazing movie, and worth seeing for sure. Any qualms I have about it don't really warrant moving down a partial flame. It's great and
nice.
No monster wieners. It's not getting any higher than a 3 from me.
Well, after the Odyssey, are you ready to talk about a movie that's definitely not going to be a 5 flame score? But
why? Because you're going to break the scale and give it 6?
Exactly. I was going to go 7, but...
Oh, wow.
Now it's just, you know, now you've ruined my whole thing, but... We'll go from one movie theater area to another. And I know you also saw this movie, but I saw Supergirl on opening weekend, actually. I went on opening weekend. Was not a very full theater when I went. I thought it was a week prior to... I thought it was opening a week earlier than it was. And I was like, okay, I have this day off of work. I'll go watch Supergirl. And then realized, oh shit, no, it comes out later. It came out the last weekend of June and not the third weekend or fourth weekend or whatever. The weekend before. But I did see it, so let's chat about it. For those not in the know, Supergirl is a 2026 American superhero film based on the DC Comics superheroine Kara Zor-El / Supergirl. It's directed by Craig Gillespie, written by Anna Nogueira. It is the second film in the DC Universe, the DCU. This is not the DCEU, not the Snyderverse. Millie Alcock stars in the title role alongside Matthias Schoenaerts, Eve Ridley, David Krumholtz, Emily Beecham, David Corn Sweat, and Jason Momoa. If I mess up any of those names, I apologize. In the film, Kara embarks on a journey across the galaxy to hunt down an adversary who has harmed her pet dog, Crypto. The film is produced by Peter Safran and James Gunn of DC Studios. Overall, thought it was a fine movie. I enjoyed it. I didn't think it was all that bad. I know that there was a lot of internet discourse. She's not pretty enough to be Supergirl.
Listen, I don't know what's going on with our topics today, but these sweaty-ass bitches constantly crawling out of the shadows and up the cracks of our asses. I'm over it.
But I think it was a good film. I think, you know, I think that, you know, I know James Gunn wasn't directly, you know, in charge of this movie, but overseeing the DCU, I think he's a good concept of what he wants these films to be, the sense of not belonging. It adapted a Kara Zor-El story that I did not, I'm not a big DC person. You all know that. So I don't really know as much of the Kara Zor-El Supergirl backstory that I know is what I got from the CW, you know, that she was sent to care for her cousin. Pod got knocked off course. She ended up in the Phantom Zone. Showed up after he was already, you know, she's older than him, but showed up when he was already an adult because of that detour into the Phantom Zone. That's not the route they went with this backstory. She is younger than Clark. I saw online people talking about like the story that this is, I guess, based on or what the basis of this is, but they, when Krypton was exploding, Kara's father managed to essentially kind of bubble the center or bubble a portion of it. And it became its own little city / planet that eventually killed everybody because of kryptonite poisoning. And then that's when they decided to send Kara to meet up with her cousin on Earth. And the one thing, and maybe I'm misremembering this from Superman, James Gunn's Superman, the video that his parents left, that was, they did want him to take over Earth. Was that legitimate or was that doctored by Lex in that movie?
That was legitimate.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So that was legitimate.
Based on what Mr. Terrific said,
Because it carries through in this. Yeah. Because when Kara's parents send her, you know, she's whatever, 8, 10, something. I think it was like 8 years old, mm-hmm. something like that. Because they lasted for almost 10 years and whatever. They didn't get it on and produce a child until a couple of years into this floating city planet thing was going on. But they mention the fact of like, you know, meet up with your cousin and go rule over Earth or whatever. And I was like, did we ever confirm that? But yeah, as you're right, Mr. Terrific did say that it was legitimate video footage. I still think that's a very odd, like, backstory to have for the Kryptonians, but hey, whatever. I hated the fact that Krypto dying was the clock for this movie. I hated the fact that, like, that was the, like, that had to be the impetus. Like, don't do that to me. Why?
Why? It felt a little manipulative. It felt a little manipulative, I'm not gonna lie.
A little. I mean, that was the whole impotence to the story.
It felt like there could have been something else. I get, like, it felt like they did it to avoid the CGI on the dog. That was, like, the only reason that they did it. But then it was just a really shitty, like, I knew that she was going to save Krypto, but at the same time, like, don't do that. Don't do that to me. The only other thing that really stuck out to me that I wasn't a huge fan of was Lobo. Not that Momoa didn't do a good portrayal of Lobo. I just felt like he wasn't necessary. Like, the entire thing could have been done without him, and it would have been fine.
Honestly, that is kind of Lobo to a T. I think it wasn't until they did, like, a Justice League Dark book where it was Lobo and Constantine and, like, a couple of other, like, not really villains, but, like, very much mercenary-type characters. And he had a... Lobo's the main man. He's a fuck... He's, like, my definition of a fuckboy. Literally and... literary-wise and physically. So he's very much... He shows up to potentially... When he shows up, you don't know if he's going to be an antagonist or if he's going to be like, oh, I have to kill that guy too, so I'll help you out. But I'm taking the money. Like, that's kind of where he's like a, I don't know, kind of like a more threatening Deadpool. Like, just not as funny. He's like the toxic masculinity of the fandom made real in the comic.
I can see that. And that, yeah. I mean, and that's to say, like, I'm not discounting the portrayal. I'm not discounting whether it was accurate or not, because to what you're saying, yeah, absolutely get it. And it did.
The story would have progressed possibly the exact same way without him.
Yeah.
It just seems like a character like Lobo, who for the most part is always kind of someone who just is in the universe of DC Comics, but is never a focus of DC Comics, and where he can just go in and out of all these different characters' stories willy-nilly and just show up wherever a writer wants to put him. Mm-hmm. That works fine for an entire universe of comics. But when you have such limited space in a movie, having a character like that just pop in, and granted, we have to give James Gunn a little grace for his overarching vision of what the DCU will turn into. And Lobo might become a larger character down the line.
Yeah.
Hopefully there's some sort of payoff. But if it's just going to be to randomly pop up little places, I don't know. He didn't add or detract. He was just kind of there.
Yeah. And I think if he had just kind of popped in, maybe wasn't hunting down the same people, mm-hmm. but was a thing, maybe involved in the bar fight, and then that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Great little, like, cameo, great little piece.
Like, hey, I know that guy. Like,
yeah, like, could have been a whole thing in that scene, and then been done. Him popping up having been taken prisoner, and, like, there was a lot of plot devices. And I know that sounds silly to say in a superhero movie.
Relief, and that was just how he did comic relief in this movie.
Sure, but I think that this, I don't want to say MacGuffins because it wasn't necessarily MacGuffins, but I think that there was just, there is a certain amount of suspension of disbelief that you have. It's a comic book movie. You have to. You can't not. But it's like, oh, they left her to die on this planet because it has a green sun, but it also has a yellow one. So as long as she survives the night, she'll be okay. Just the fact that I don't even remember the villain's name. That's how boring he was.
Grab of the Yellow Hills.
But the fact that he had kryptonite tipped arrows, and it was like, I've never used these before, but I'm glad I have them. Like, that to me was like, there was a lot where it was like, you're really stretching how far I have to suspend my disbelief here. But with that said, I think that the movie was a decent superhero movie. The only other thing, and I saw this online, hotly debated online, not in that way, but in the climax fight, like Supergirl is taking out all of these evil men who have imprisoned these girls, these little girls, to do unspeakable deeds, and she's just powers out, just destroying them, where in most other films there would be a phenomenal orchestral score to underscore that moment and have a Superman theme or Supergirl's theme or whatever, just to be like, here's this moment. Instead, they decided, we're going to do a cover of Jimmy Eat World, The Middle, as the song.
That was a choice.
It was a choice. I wasn't as appalled by it.
Like, again, even though he wasn't directing, that's very James Gunn.
But he didn't do it in Superman.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, music, absolutely. And music was a part of this as well. The bar scene on the planet, the jukebox, and all the, like, all that. Absolutely understand. I wasn't like, oh my God, why are we? But I was sitting in the theater going, this feels a little on the nose. Did I sing along? Yes. It's The Middle by Jimmy Eat World. And you're going to sing along to it. I'm pretty sure it's on the playlist of songs that get white people turned. It just happens. But it was an odd choice for that moment in the film. But overall opinions from you all. What were your key takeaways from or thoughts from Supergirl?
So for me, I actually felt like this was a better representation of Kara. This version of her and the version in My Adventures with Superman, she remembers Kryptonian, like some forms of Kryptonian culture. She knew the language. Superman meeting her was the funniest shit I've ever watched in my life, where he's like, why am I talking louder? Like, the fact that he is so far removed from his own culture, like his birth culture, that he knew she was speaking Kryptonian, but he was like, I can't speak it. Like, it's just a very, like, she doesn't have that same drive as him, because to her, Earth is very different. Things are very different. And she's traumatized from the slow. He didn't know. His trauma is he never knew his people. Her trauma is she got to watch her people slowly. She was part of, like, her family slowly dying. So, like, I feel like this is a better depiction of Kara. The CW one, they started it perfectly, like, with her calling her, like, foster family, her mother by her first name. Like, she's very detached and removed. somewhat. She's not as alien in the CW series, but she definitely became a lot more like Clark around like the later seasons. But I definitely like it when Kara is a little more alien and a little more like, oh, well, this is very low rent. Like, this is kind of a backwater place to be. So I definitely love her depiction of Kara. And I actually am very excited because I know she's supposed to appear in A Man of Tomorrow. So I'm very interested to see how her and Clark interact more now that she's kind of dealt with some of her issues. But no, I thought this was, and I've read the comics this is based on, and it's a really good, honestly, that's probably my favorite Supergirl story in the comics. But yeah, I liked it.
Eric?
I really like Millie Alcock's portrayal of Kara a lot. This felt like a necessary emotional arc for her to have to then put her into Superman's story going forward. We needed the background and all that so that in Man of Tomorrow, we don't need to do any sort of more understanding of, I mean, yes, there's going to be an emotional arc for her in that as well, but we don't need to tell everything. I felt like the villain was such a nothing burger that just like you said, they had to have all this environmental handicap for her to even have it be any sort of fight at all. So that was kind of disappointing. Yeah, we're probably never going to see this Ruthie character again. Which is a little sad that kind of nothing from her movie is going to carry over. I mean, probably Lobo's going to show up again because Jason Momoa and James Gunn's not going to not use him.
Sure. I'll use him.
But I don't think there's anyone else from this movie who's going to show up in the rest of the DCU. Yeah. And that's just a little disappointing.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, we never know. It could be something that's a larger thing, and maybe it will be something, and maybe we will see more from this planet or from this story. But I agree. I do think that it was good that this got to give us it was an origin story that didn't necessarily need to be just an origin story, and that we got that she got to a place where she can now move forward, because we saw that party girl detached Supergirl at the end of Superman. This gives us background into that. We see the history, and then we see her understand and realize that maybe aliens and humans aren't so different after all, but enough to the point where at least, you know, she wants to be closer to her family. So that's good. Overall, I'd give it a 3 flame rating for myself. What about you guys?
Same. About a three.
Yeah. I definitely, if you haven't seen it, if you're a superhero person and you're like, catch it on streaming, you know, when it comes out, I'm pretty sure it's not in theaters anymore, but, give it a watch. I think it was a perfectly good movie, and I'm glad that I went and I saw it, and we'll see what happens with the DCU moving forward. We got the announcement for Lanterns coming to HBO Max August 18th today as well, I believe. Don't quote me on whether or not that did come out today. I just saw it on somebody's
came Instagram out story. There was like a DC like big reveal thing, and it revealed a bunch of the future projects. Lanterns, they actually showed a trailer and a clip for Lanterns. Creature Commandos season 2. They dropped the character designs, some of the new creatures that are going to be on the team, and a Joker-centric anime where the Joker is hunting down somebody that successfully killed Batman. So it's like the Joker solving a crime. So I'm a little bit excited about that. I haven't seen it. They haven't shown any like clips. But I think that was Joker Laugh Riot. And then there was supposedly a release date for the Batman 2.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, that covers the topics we were going to talk about. I will mention this for our listeners in case there is anybody in the area or that will be attending it. I will be going to Uncanny Expo mid-September this year. My friend Matthew has always enjoyed dressing up and costuming and has done a fantastic bunch of different like X-Men characters that he's done for Halloween. He did a Krakoan Charles Xavier. He's done Nightcrawler, Mr. Sinister. And then he went to C2E2 this year and did Namor. And has now kind of connected with some of the cosplaying community here in Chicago and enjoying exploring that. And part of that conversation that we had was he was contemplating going to another event. And one of the ones he mentioned was on Uncanny Expo. And I was like, hey, I would totally go to that. I'll drive. Let's go to Minneapolis. So mid-September, we will be in Minneapolis for Uncanny Expo. If you are going, let me know. Reach out to me. If you've been there before, reach out to me. Give me some tips and some pointers. Thinking about doing the Hellfire Gala after party on Saturday and then the event itself on Saturday and Sunday. But if there are any tips, tricks, things to keep an eye out, things to avoid, let a bitch know and reach out to me. But aside from that, thank you boys for joining me on this episode. We will be back next month with more pop culture news, tidbits, things that we've enjoyed. And maybe even before that, a Spider-Man episode. We'll see. We'll see how schedules and everything align. But until next time, flame off.
Bye.